Welcome to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast. My name is Dr. Andrew Trasilla, working for NHS Somerset, and I'm really pleased to be joined by our colleague and friend.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Sarah Coop. I'm a GP by background and also a medical educator. And it's great. We've got two colleagues from Somerset today, Dr. Tom McConnell and Dr. Will Chandler. Tom, do you want to introduce yourself and then pass to Will?
I'm Tom McConnell. I'm a cardiologist working at Musgrove Park Hospital in Somerset.
Great, thanks, Tom.
Yeah, and hi, I'm Will Chandler. I'm a GP at Frenchway Health Centre in Taunton.
And I couldn't possibly say that we're partners in crime and various things that we do together. And today we're talking about shared access. What is shared access?
Shared access is about hospital and GP colleagues working together for their patients' benefit.
So, Tom, how did it come about?
A number of things came together. The first thing that happened was that for a long time, and you'll know as working in general practice, that colleagues wanted access to tests like echocardiograms that cardiologist, inverted commas, controlled to improve the patient's access to these tests. But there was a nervousness on the part of cardiologists because there was an understanding that it wasn't just the test, it was the interpretation of the test that colleagues were really after. The information is fine, but how do you use that information? And so there was that tension in the system, and I came across a process where you could use video conferencing to have virtual MDTs. And basically that need in the community was put together with the idea that you could perhaps have meetings with colleagues without actually going physically to see them, which is time saving. And shared access came out of that, where we had the local knowledge of the person being mixed with the specialist knowledge of the cardiologist, and coming up with the best investigations, test organized, result sent back, plan in place, usually with the patient only having to make one trip to hospital rather than several, if at all.
And I would add to that, Tom, that this was all achieved through a virtual dialogue between the primary and secondary care clinician. And of course, you can cover so much more ground, subtlety and nuance in a conversation than you can in a dictated letter or email. And I think that we very often managed to discuss far more cases than we had planned and actually have far more productive outcomes than perhaps were anticipated.
So that sounds amazing. So how long has this been happening in Somerset? Tom, tell us a bit more about when it started and perhaps how it's developed over that time.
So it first started in 2017 with a couple of practices in Bridgewater, which is about 10-12 miles from Taunton. And it came out of partly at that time, the Taunton practices, their local group had bought echocardiograms, and Bridgewater wanted some of that as well. So that was part of it. And also, Will's kind of alluded to, we had been pushed down an advice and guidance pathway, which, dare I say, has the opportunity for people to be quite rude to each other, where you get a question, you think, did I really need to be asked that? And you can write quite a terse reply an email if you're not careful. And actually, as Will said, medicine is much more complicated than just a black and white answer. And so we were looking for something more. And that was really what got it going. And actually, those complex conversations that we have added so much more value to that interaction. And I suspect it's because of that growing knowledge of each other that it's kept going, and that's allowed it to keep building.
Yeah, so I can really see some benefits for all angles, for primary care, secondary care, and for patients. Will, just asking you, just from a GP perspective, what would you say have been some of the main benefits from your angle?
I think that what surprised me more than a little has been that the patient hasn't always found that they need to be involved in that clinical conversation. They're very happy to trust a GP who they know to have a dialogue on their behalf. And I think that being able to say to a patient, I have an access clinic in 2 weeks' time. I'll be discussing your case with the consultant cardiologist at 4 o'clock. I will phone you at 4:15 to tell you what the upshot of that conversation is and what change to therapy or investigation or otherwise we need to be considering. Everybody knows exactly where they are in that time frame. It's not an open-ended referral into an outpatient that may happen at some stage in the future. And it enables the system to be really responsive and to get back to the patient at a time that you can both agree is convenient for them.
Sounds absolutely fantastic. And we've heard that this has been going nearly 5 years now from 2017, and we heard Bridgewater to start with, and Will, I know you're in Taunton, so that's two areas, but how far geographically does this cover, and is it cardiology only?
One of my colleagues is also working with colleagues in North Sedgemoor. I know that one of our Yeovil colleagues, an endocrinologist, is doing diabetic MDTs in a similar way. It is a concept which we would like to grow, because we can see we have experienced lots of benefits from it. But like all concepts, I think people who are time pressured, whether that be in primary care or secondary care, are wary to take on something new. I think some specialties will lend themselves better than others. Cardiology, because a lot of it is about tests, which as well as an opinion, that I think that makes it more attractive, because you can, as I said at the beginning, you can use the knowledge that the general practitioner has of their patient with the access to tests that I have, and put those two together and make that whole journey much faster for the patient. And that's in everyone's interest, to make that as tidy as possible. I think what I would want to do is grow the idea, and it's up to other specialties to work with primary care colleagues as to how they can support each other in this. Because I think that's one of the other things which has come out of it, that there is the shared aspect of it can't be underestimated, the value of the knowledge that the general practitioner, and we have nurse practitioners who contribute as well, and more recently pharmacists, the local knowledge that they have of the person very much informs the decision making, and there's a shared bit of how that decision making works, because there is the pressure of the guideline and there's the wisdom of experience, and how you put those two together in a way that works best for the patient. This is a forum in which you can do that, because you're bringing both things into the same room at the same time. And I think that's a really good way to practice medicine.
I would echo that completely, Tom. And I would also, thank Andrew and Sarah for giving us the opportunity to come and do this, because if you're either a primary care clinician who thinks this is something that I would wish to be involved in, or a secondary care clinician who thinks this might suit my ology to develop this, then I would encourage both sets to hold your nose, jump in and give it a go. Start to rebuild those relationships between primary and secondary care that perhaps have been eroded due to the fact that we're also very busy within the system, and to get the benefit of the, as Tom's highlighted, the shared aspect of the clinic, which is one of the things that's come out of this for us at French Weir.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think what I'm hearing, if I'm hearing correctly, is it's come out of that need for timely advice and guidance, but rather than it being a letter where, as you said, Tom, sometimes the reply might be slightly terse, or it might be that actually there's still unanswered questions from a letter correspondence. By doing this in a way that's real time, by having that virtual conferencing, you can actually make sure that you, as a clinician, primary care clinician, have your questions answered about that specific patient by the specialist in that time. And as you said, then again, you can then feed back to the patient very quickly afterwards, which is really valuable. It's also a great use of resources, isn't it? So rather than perhaps making that referral into secondary care when perhaps that isn't needed, it's a way of actually making sure that then resources get used in the appropriate way for patients. So I can really see that, that's a huge benefit as well. What else have been some of the benefits that perhaps you didn't foresee when you set this up? Tom, what are some of the things that have come out of that, and then come to you, Will, as well? What are some of the things that you didn't expect that have actually come to light?
It's fun to do.
Okay.
And you know, I think, you know, I can't underestimate the value of that. You know, so much of what we're doing, you feel under real pressure, and I genuinely enjoy working with my primary care colleagues, you know, building on, you know, those relationships and those mutual respects that come out of knowing each other. And it is really healthy, and it makes for much better patient care. And to be honest, when we're all under so much pressure, it's nice to get a smile from a colleague and be helpful to a colleague, and just we all feel better for that. And I think that's a two-way street. So that to me has been one of the biggest values. I think the other thing it's taught me a little bit about education, and I realize that actually, you know, I can sit in my ivory tower and be grumpy about a question. I think, well, surely they know that. The truth is that we all ask the same question quite often because we don't remember it. And I know that as someone who's getting on a wee bit in my career now, I don't remember as much stuff as I think I once did. But so you need to keep coming back to things. And so to create a forum where it's quite safe to ask, for want of a better expression, a silly question, the truth is there's no such thing as a silly question. That's actually usually the best question because everyone's thinking it. So actually having a forum where that question can be asked as many times as it needs to be asked is really healthy. And it ultimately leads to better patient care, and that's what this is all about. This is not about it's good that as we do it, I enjoy it and my colleagues enjoy it, but actually ultimately it's about doing the right thing for that person, and if we do the right thing, they're going to need less healthcare, and that works in everyone's advantage. So and we have got some evidence that you know that when we initially piloted it, we actually see how many new patient referrals came from those practices before and after, and actually new patient referrals dropped by about 30% to cardiology. So there was a very tight, you know, we've got a clear advantage from that. And it is, as Will said, it's quite efficient use of time. Depending on the clinic or the you can do between 6 and 12 patients in an hour. And that's quite, you know, there's a bit of preparation and there's a bit of work afterwards, but that's actually as efficient as any outpatient clinic I do. But from the patient's perspective, think how much less of the patient's time we've used in that. And that's a very important consideration in all of this as well. And hopefully we're delivering care to the same standard. And we have that evidence because we've looked retrospectively to see, well, these patients that we discussed, were they admitted more frequently or did they come up? And actually, we've got no evidence of that. So this is a safe way to work together.
That's coming out loud and clear, as you said, best for the patient, but also I really like that you said you enjoy it and it's efficient for you in terms of your time as well. But also that shared learning, you know, you both learn from each other, don't you, as primary and secondary care physicians, and both having that sense of understanding of each other's world and that increased mutual respect, which I think is really, really valuable as well. And just having that connection. I think we talked about this a lot in podcasts before around the need for that human connection, particularly during the pandemic. But also, you know, on a daily basis in our work, we can, as clinicians, be quite isolated, can't we, in our consulting rooms. And maybe there's some patients who are listening, or people who are listening to this podcast who really recognize that as well. They know that for their well-being, it's really good to have that interaction with others. So you're saying, as a doctor, you know how important that is, that you're interacting with colleagues and not just always a piece of paper, how much you value that. And I think that's a common lesson for us all, isn't it, that, you know, in this world of so much technology, which is fantastic, and obviously technology is helping this project, but yeah, it comes down to really sometimes just needing that human interaction as well. So Will, what about you? What have been some of the maybe unexpected benefits that you've seen come out of this?
I'd certainly say, Sarah, that patients don't miss the car parking charges. And I know that may sound trivial, but in their busy lives, an outpatient is very often a trip to a hospital, a sit around and a wait, for something that sometimes they will reflect back to us in primary care as being, well, he told me I'd need the test that you told me I'd need, but you can't order. And actually, you know, just streamlining that whole process has been of great benefit. What I'd also like to just pick up on is Tom's point, and he hinted at it about the educational aspect of this. I actually not infrequently will stay on the call after my patient that I've referred has been discussed, and I will just listen to the next patient being presented by my colleague in practice. And there is always something that we can learn, no matter how long we've been in the job. The definitely is a you know, an educational benefit to this, because in a way I'm shadowing Tom in his outpatient by sitting behind him listening to the advice he's giving. So I think that's been a spin-off that maybe I didn't see. I think also it's good that sometimes secondary care clinicians accept that as primary care clinicians we hold a lot of risk. And it's not always comfortable holding that risk, but being able to, as I said earlier, give a patient a time frame, say that I will be addressing this issue that you're very worried about because you're not feeling great, at this time, at this date, and get back to you, just very neatly packages it for a patient in you know, the world of Uber medicine. Because it's not open-ended, and it's not when am I going to hear, and my outpatients might have been cancelled or delayed or whatever else. And I think that, like it or not, this is the world we live in now, and this is the expectation.
So just to sort of think about a patient journey, Will, say I'm your patient, I've come along to you, I'm 64 and I'm a bit short of breath on a hill these days. I haven't got the puff like I used to. I can't even, I'm pushing the bike up and using it rather than riding it. You've done my bloods I'm not anemic. You listened to my heart I caught sight of your face as you listened to it, and you spotted my ankle swelling and said, I think I ought to send you along to my friend Tom McConnell. So that's my first meeting with you. What's happened? Would that be a sort of suitable case? And what happens next?
Yeah, I think that's a very reasonable scenario, Andrew. And in essence, what would happen then is I would explain to you that I'm going to make a referral into our next shared access clinic. I'll be able to give you the time and the date of that, because that should be on my EMIS calendar. I will write a referral letter specifying the clinic that I wish to discuss your case in to Tom. And when he comes to discuss the cases, he will have the ability to look at EMIS read only, so he can see what I've written. He can hopefully make sense of the fact that I might have done some pertinent blood tests and other investigations and what my findings are. And so already, you know, he's starting partway down the journey. And I'm then also, as I said earlier to Sarah, able to say to you, Andrew, I'm discussing you a week next Wednesday. I'll give you a ring later that afternoon when we've had a conversation and tell you what the plan is. And patients like a roadmap. They like a plan. They like to know, okay, this is my direction and journey of travel. And so it is, it's a very efficient and very neatly packaged way of dealing with it.
Thank you. I was going to ask Tom to follow on with me as the patient. What happens next in this particular scenario?
So Will have discussed it with you. I will agree with him that an echocardiogram is an entirely reasonable thing to do, and I will just fill out the form. And your form, Andrew, will have the same priority as any form that I fill out. So we'll, and in view of your circumstances, there'll be a BNP there as well. If it's above 2,000, you'll have your echo done in a couple of weeks. If it's a wee bit more, if it's less than that, then it might be a bit longer, but that, and that will be conveyed back. And as soon as I've got the echo result, I will send it back to Will with a plan for your medication and how we're going to adjust things. And if we find something more complex, then I'll arrange an outpatient appointment for you.
And I think that's a really good point that you've touched on there, Tom, that anybody who may be concerned around ownership of results and ownership of responsibility for action, the basic rules of the game apply. So Tom has organized the test result comes back to Tom, and then he lets me know. So from a primary care perspective, I'm not left trying to interpret an extremely complex set of investigations that I'm in a poor position to make an accurate diagnosis with.
So we've talked about a case where we make some very positive decisions about tests. I think the other thing that the shared risk-taking allows is a decision not to do things as well, which is equally as important for the person. And the example I would give of a man who was admitted to one of the, where he was seen by the general practitioner who covered that hospital, who very appropriately noted that his ankles were swollen, he was a bit more breathless, he checked BNP, which was elevated, he made the referral to the heart failure service. This chap was then discharged back to his own doctor up in, who knew him very well, who, because he knew me through the shared access, said, Tom, would you just... do you think this man really needs an echo? I think he's going to struggle to come down to Taunton to have his echocardiogram. He's on these medications. What do you think? And because of that relationship that we had and looking at the notes, we could say, well, actually, I think you're absolutely right that there's no clear advantage in following the guideline for this individual, because actually he's on an ACE inhibitor. You're treating his diuretic. We know he's been quite immobile when he was in the psychiatric facility. He's more mobile now. His ankles aren't as swollen. Let's just continue to monitor him in the community. If you're worried, we can organise the echo at a later date. So it allows for a very personalised care where we're really drawing on that primary care wisdom and knowledge of the person.
Yeah, that shows, doesn't it, that this can be used at various stages in the journey, both pre-first outpatient appointment to through post-admission as well, let's say for things that might come up in the patient's journey. Just as we're coming to wrapping up, and this has been a really, really interesting discussion, and thank you both so much for sharing this information and your knowledge and expertise. I guess, is there just one thing you would want to say to listeners out there, if this is something new to them, or if they're clinicians, what's maybe one thing that you might want to say to them in terms of your experience and what maybe they could do, just really briefly. So Will, is there anything as a final point?
Depends who my target audience is, Sarah. I think if I'm talking to clinicians, I would say if this is something you're thinking of doing, then give it a go. Establish those relationships and let them grow. If I'm talking to job planners, find time in schedules to actually give consultants a bit of time to do this. This gets best done when it's not shoehorned in between everything else. Actually, it needs some priority because actually, as Tom said earlier, it helps a great deal with outpatient workload with subsequent referral, and we get to cover a lot of ground. So it's actually quite efficient.
Yeah, thank you. So you're really highlighting that added value, I think, in there, and giving it the time that it needs. Tom, anything else to add as a final point?
I think Will summed up very nicely. What I would say is there's no right or wrong way to do this, but by talking with each other, and there was a lot of work with my colleagues up in Bridgewater when we first set it up, they drew up the EMIS template that we use as a referral document. So it allowed for a very efficient transfer of information. This is something that has to be done together. It can't be done as one party or other party. It's both parties that have to want to make it work. And there's a willingness to make that happen. And there's a bit of support network now that can support groups that are interested in making these sort of working relationships happen.
So that collaboration and really that peer support that really enhances, doesn't it? So Andrew, just over to you for a final word and a wrap up, if that's okay.
Well, thank you very much. Just to say thank you very much for an absolutely fascinating canter around shared access and how it's developed in Somerset to the benefit of patients and to the benefit of doctors. And thank you, Sarah, very much for co-hosting.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast, hosted by Dr. Andrew Tresidder and Dr. Peter Bagshaw. The show was created by David Seeley and was produced by Rob Huns Music on behalf of the Somerset Clinical Commissioning Group.